Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our in-person and over Zoom Thursday morning shir at the Young Israel of Woodmere. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. So it's Parshas Vayigash, but before we get to the parsha, I actually want to start with Asar B'Teves. Tomorrow is the fast of Asar B'Teves. Very unusual that we fast on Friday, and we will be going into Shabbos fasting, breaking the fast when we make Kiddush, of course. Asar B'Teves, aside from Yom Kippur, which is a De'oraisa, is the only one of the fast of the prophets that can actually be fasted on Shabbos. It's very unusual and unique. So in preparing Shir, I found a very, very interesting insight. I'm quoting from the Sefer Shalom Rav by Rabbi Rosner. Okay, you could see on Zoom what I'm quoting from. Shalom Rav by Rabbi Shalom Rosner, where he actually connects Asar B'Teves to the sale of Yosef. And it is a connection that I never heard or considered before. So I'm going to begin by quoting Rabbi Rosner. Rabbi Rosner says it's called Asar B'Teves and the sale of Yosef. Of course, Parshas Vayigash, just a partial summary. Yehuda makes a whole plea that they can't leave Binyamin there. Father will die. How can we leave Binyamin? Yosef cannot take it anymore. He can't hold back. And in Perek Mem Hei, Pasuk Gimel, he reveals himself to his brothers. They are utterly astonished. He urges them to come down to Egypt to bring father, where he will be able to provide for them in the ensuing years of famine. Yaakov and family descend to Egypt. They settle in the land of Goshen. Perek Mem Zayin ends by telling us how Yosef provides for the people of Egypt and the whole region during the years of famine. And next week is Vayechi. It's already what we call Shabbat Chazak. And we'll be finishing Sefer Bereishis. So the story of Yosef will always fall. Whoops. During the time of Asara B'Tevi. So Rabbi Rosner writes as follows. The Beit Yosef quotes the Avud Rahan as declaring that Asara B'Teves, the 10th of Teves, is unlike any other fast day besides Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur is the Oraisa, because if it would fall on Shabbos, and it can't, once the calendar was established, it can't fall on Shabbos, but if it would fall on Shabbos, we would not make the fast a Nidcha. We would actually have to fast for Asar B'Teves. So that's a pretty strong statement for something that many people consider one of the more minor fast. Perhaps it is not so minor at all. Well, the 10th of Teves cannot actually fall on Shabbos because of how the calendar works. Nevertheless, it's the only fast that can fall on Friday. And of course, when Rabbi Rosner wrote this, it wasn't just for Tafshin Pei Aleph. And this year it applies. It can fall on Friday and we go into Shabbos fasting. The Beis Yosef asks, what is so unique about Asar B'Teves that it actually trumps Shabbos? We have a mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos and Oneg Shabbos and Su'uda Shabbos. And how could it be that for something that seems so minor as Asar B'Teves that you would actually have to fast on Shabbos? So he answers with the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer explains there are two other fasts, actually, that trump Shabbos. A fast due to a bad dream, and, of course, Yom Kippurim, the Shabbat Shabbaton. What is the common theme between the fasting of Yom Kippur, Ve'inisem Esnaf Shoseichem, and a fast for a bad dream? So the Chassam Sofer explains, you may not fast on Shabbos for a past event, because a past event is a symbol of mourning. You can't fast on Shabbos for a past event as a symbol of mourning. Yom Kippur, however, is not about the past. Yom Kippur, of course, is about the future. It's what will be in the new year. We will be cleansed after we klap al chayit and we engage in teshuvah. We're saying that this coming year, we will be new people. It is about the divine decision, Yom Kippur, for the year ahead. And it's about our personal resolutions for who we will be. Not who we were, but who we will become. It is not a day of mourning. Yom Kippur, unlike all of our other fasts, is not a sad day. It's actually a day of simcha. It's a day of rejoicing. It's a day of good Yom Tov, you say to people, because you're hopeful that the future will be different. We are permitted, therefore, to fast on Shabbos because it's not a day of mourning for the past. It's a day of future hope. Similarly, a fast due to a bad dream, interesting, can also be on Shabbos because it's similarly about the future. It's a fast to prevent a future calamity. Okay, what does this have to do with Asar B'Teves? This is extremely interesting. I never saw this or heard this before until preparing the shir. With respect to the fast, the tainis of Asar B'Teves, which is tomorrow, listen to this. Every single year on Asar B'Teves, Hashem decrees whether there will be a Tisha B'Av that year. Did you ever hear that? This is not a trick question. I'm asking you seriously. Rabbi Rosner writes, and this is based on the Chasam Sofer, that every year on Asar Batavis, it is decreed if there will be a Tisha B'Av. Of course, why do we fast on Asar Batavis? Because 2,500 years ago, in the year 3336, on the Jewish calendar, under the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonians surrounded the Chomot Yerushalayim, the city of Jerusalem. They laid siege for 2.5 years. And in 3338, in the summer, in Tammuz, they broke through the walls. And 3 weeks later, on Tisha B'Av, the Babylonians set the Beit HaMikdash aflame, and it burned down. And so we have a day of mourning. But every year, Hashem decrees on Asar Batavis if there will be a Tisha B'Av that year. And that's why we can fast on the 10th of Tevis, even if it falls on Shabbos, because like Yom Kippur, which is for the future, and like a fast for a bad dream, which is to prevent a future calamity, Asar Batavis is the day of decree if there will be a future calamity of Tisha B'Av this year. It's the day every year that will determine whether Tisha B'Av will be a Yom Tov or a Yom Aveilut, a day of mourning. Wow. What does this have to do with Yosef? Because we began by pointing out that the Jewish calendar and the Parshios are very strongly connected. Many reasons why Yosef is related to Hanukkah. It's not an accident how the Jewish calendar and the Parshios fall out. So having said that, which is an incredible insight in and of itself, I just think it's important because we tend to think of Asar Batavis as like a very minor fast. It's really not so minor after all. So now, what does this have to do with Yosef? It gets even more interesting. Rabbi Baruch Simon, in his Imre Baruch, adds, in the name of Rabbi Shlomo Fisher, we know that certain sins cause Shivasar Batamos, and certain sins cause Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av was a result of Atem Bechisim Bechir Shachinam, and Yikoveh Lechem Bechir Ledoros, the spies return, but Midbar Perek Yud Gimel into Yadalad, and Eretz Yisrael is so terrible, so the sin of the spies decreed Tisha B'Av. The sin of Chayr Ha'ega, Moshe broke the Luchos, was the first Shivasar Batamos. What triggered Asar Batavis? So these are days of mourning for Chorban. Chorban Beis HaMikdash specifically, but let's just understand what I just said. Shivasar Batamos, the first Shivasar Batamos was by Chayr Ha'ega. Moshe comes down from the mountain, he sees the people sinning, he drops the Luchos, that's Shivasar Batamos. And it became a day of calamity going forward. So Tisha B'Av also, the first Tisha B'Av was when the spies came back. Lo nucha la'alo, we cannot possibly go up. Ki chazaku mimenu, the people are stronger than God, says Rashi. That day of calamity when the spies mourned for Eretz Yisrael became the calamity of Galus and Chorban. So if there's a pattern that these days of mourning for the Beis HaMikdash and Chorban are pre-shadowed by a previous event, what is the event that foreshadowed Asar Batavis? Ready? Rabbi Baruch Simon writes in his Imre Baruch, what triggered Asar Batavis? Quoting Rabbi Fisher, Rabbi Baruch suggests, while we don't know for sure, Chazal do not specifically tell us like they do vis-a-vis Shivasar Batamas and Tisha B'Av. Nevertheless, we can propose, ready? It was the sale of Yosef. Mechiras Yosef. That's the connection. The mazel of Teves is a goat. Does anyone know about the mazalot? Not me. The mazel of Teves is a goat, and it was the goat's blood that the brothers shechted, that they dipped in the ksonas pasim, that they took back to father and said, recognize this coat. Is it the coat of your son or not? And he said, I will go down in mourning to the grave for my son. My son has been torn to shreds. The mazel of Teves is a goat, which is a reminder of the goat that the brother shechted, to dip the ksonas pasim into that blood as a symbol of the sale of Yosef. If Asar Batavis, concludes Rabbi Rosner, is connected to the sale of Yosef, then it behooves us every year at this time to remember what the sin of the sale of Yosef was all about, to work on our Ahavas Chinam and Ahavas Achim as a tikkun for the sale of Yosef, represented by the Ksonas Pasim dipped in goat's blood, which the goat is the symbol of Teves. Teves is the month where God decrees every year. It's fascinating. Who knew this? Not me. If there will be a Tisha B'Av, And therefore, you could actually fast on Shabbos. It's so calamitous and such a foreshadowing for the future that if it fell on Shabbat, you would even need to fast. We will have a taste of that tomorrow, no pun intended, because we will go into Shabbos fasting. If we work, perhaps, as Rabbi Rosner, on our Ahavat Chinam and our Ahavat Achim, our love, free love, on the way society understands it, but in love for our brothers, perhaps we can do our part in helping to turn Tisha B'Av this year, not into mourning, but into a Yom Tov. What, in fact, precipitated the sale of Yosef? It's a foreshadowing of the galus that would befall us. And Perek Lamed Zayin, which is when things really heat up between Yosef and the brothers. We are told initially, Vayava Yosef esti basam ra elavihem. Yosef saw the brothers doing things he did not understand, perhaps. He thought they were eating Avram in a chai, limb from a live animal. He saw them being mezalzel, the b'nei shvachos. He saw them hanging out with what he thought was not Jewish woman. Well, that's not a right term. Nobody then was technically Jewish, but woman that they shouldn't have been hanging out with. Vayava Yosef esti basam ra elavihem. The sin of Lashon Hara was caused the whole machlokas between Yosef and his brothers to be launched. And then it gets worse. We are told they hate him so much, lo yachu dabra l'shalom. They can't speak to each other in peace. And then beferush, vayisnu oso, al devarav v'achalamav. They hate him. And then after the second dream, vayikanu bo achal, v'aviv shavmer sadavar. They are jealous. The ingredients that caused the destruction of our temple are all seen in the story of the Seah of Yosef and the brothers. And even though this week's Parsha Vayigash is reconciliation and reunion, says Rabbi Rosner, it behooves us when we come to Asar B'Tevis to remember the mazel of Tevis, the goat of the Ksonis Pasim, which it was dipped into, the hatred between brothers, which led to the first Galus, the Yosef Hu Ad Mitzrayma, and which led to our subsequent Galios. And Hashem looks on Asar B'Tevis to see how we're doing every year. And so it's a fast for the future, because will we be forced to mourn once again on Tisha B'Av? They couldn't speak to each other in peace. There was Lashon Hara, there was hatred, and there was jealousy. And the Gemara tells us in Maseches Yuma, Tes Amud Beis, which I usually quote all the time during the 3 weeks. Why was the first temple destroyed? Because of three cardinal sins, says the Gemara. And you all know this. Avodah Zarah, Gilui Erayos, and Shfichus Damim. Adultery, and bloodshed. But in the time of the second temple, when they were involved in wonderful good deeds, acts of loving kindness and charity, why was it destroyed? Because there was baseless hatred. To teach you, that baseless hatred is equal to idolatry, immorality, and murder. But then the Gemara says, "V'bayis rishon lo havei bei." What's the lashon? V'bayis rishon lo havei bei sinis chinim. In the time of the first temple, was there no baseless hatred? Was it only the three cardinal sins? The Gemara answers that there was. Elu b'nei Adam sheochlim v'shosim ze'etzeh v'dokun etzeh b'charvot shebelashonam. These were the people in the time of the first temple who ate and drank with one another, but they stabbed each other with the swords of the tongue. So the whole sale of Yosef is a foreshadowing of what would happen to us. We replicated the sins. Yosef ends up in Galus. The family ends up in Galus. And here we are, 2,000 years after Churban Bayis Sheni. I want to thank Paul Spodek for sending me a short Ratoria Shev by Judah Michelle, and I never heard this either. And I'm going to tie it into our Shir. The parsha begins, Vayigash Yehuda, Vayomer bi Adoni, Yedaberna avdecha b'aznei Adoni, Vayichayabcha ki kamocha kaparo, Perek Mem Dalet. Yehuda comes close to Yosef, who he doesn't know is Yosef. I'm going to kill you like I'm going to kill Pharaoh, says Rashi, if you keep Binyamin here. Yehuda's prepared to go to combat for his brother. But the word Vayigash, with which the parsha begins, Vav is and, Yod is he, and Gimel Shin is a two-letter root for the word to come close. Vayigash Avraham, Perek Yud Ches, Avram came close to God, to Davin. Thank you. Are they closing it? No? Is it noisy? It's okay? Okay, so Vayigash is a two-letter root for to come close, which is how the whole parsha begins. And Rabbi Judah Michel wrote something so interesting. When the brothers come down with Yaakov, they settle in the region of Goshen. Even in Perek Mem Zayin, Pasuk Yud Aleph, when it says that Yosef settled his father and his brothers in Ramses, like Paro said, Rashi points out Ramses is in the region of Goshen. So we all know they settled in Goshen. The Pasuk says, V'es Yehuda Shalach Lefanav Lahoros, V'es Yehuda Shalach Lahoros Lefanav Geshona. Yaakov sent Yehuda before him to Goshen to set up a base medrash. So the region where the Jews lived in Egypt is Goshen. Rabbi Judah Michel points out it's the same root, Gimel Shin. What was the purpose of settling them in Goshen? There was a message. Yosef, from the root, were to come close. Yosef was trying to send a message to his family, to the very brothers who sold him. Because Vayisnu Oso, Al Chalama Ve'Aldevarav, because V'lo Yachlu Darbalusham, V'kaz Vayikanu Bo'achav, HaMaloch Tim Lochaleinu, HaMashol Tim Shobanu. Because of the divide between brothers that caused Galus, he was trying to rectify and repair that machlokus, that divide, machlokus from the root word chalak, to apportion. He wanted to bring them all close to each other. And Goshen, with the Gimel Shin, teaches us that he wanted to once again reestablish the feeling of Ahavas Achim, to quote Rabbi Rasner, Ahavas Chinam, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda wants to come close once again to Yosef. And he settles them in Goshen. Well, we really learn that the rectification, the ticket out of Galus, on the way to have the Beit HaMikdash rebuilt, is through coming close to our brothers. And you see this entire theme of dissent, of divide, and then once again closeness in the story of the sale of Yosef, which is read by the time of Asar B'Teves, which is the mazel of Gol Teves, which is the foreshadowing for the future. Will there be a Tisha B'Av this year or not? And so you could even fast on Shabbos. You all have to strive to recreate that feeling of Goshen, proverbially. Geish hala vayigash, to come close once again to all of our brothers, whether we agree with them or not, whether we see eye to eye or not, whether hashkafically we're the same or not. But if divide causes galus, then only unity will bring geula. Okay. Moving on to the piece of Rav Salvechik that I want to share with you today. Does anyone have any questions on here? No. Okay. So, it's one of my favorite pieces of Rav Salvechik. It's extremely powerful. I'll first begin by quoting the psukim in the beginning of Vayigash. What happens? The stories, the parashios of Vayeshev, Kmiketz, Vayigash, and Vayechi are totally interconnected. They're one long story. It's not like when you have a parasha that seems to exist in isolation. Sometimes in Vayikra, okay, Tazri and Mitzvah go together. They're one long run-on story. From Perek Lamed Zayin through Perek Nun, it's one connection. So at the end of last week's parsha, the brothers come down for a second time with Binyamin, and they eat with Yosef, and after they leave, the gaviyah is planted in the saddle pack of Binyamin, unbeknownst to the brothers. The servants run after, "What did you do? You paid back the good that my master did with bad." And they said, "Nobody stole the gaviyah. How could you think we would do this?" They all lower their saddle packs, they check the oldest to the youngest, and the gaviyah is found. Disaster of disasters, this is the worst possible scenario in the saddle pack of Binyamin. They all go back to the house of Yosef. Everyone's free to go. Binyamin's going to remain a slave. Again, they don't know yet that it's Yosef. Vayigash elav Yehuda. So you can't just start in Parshas Vayigash. The story, of course, begins in Vayeshev through Miketz, and then we come to Vayigash. Well, we already spoke about the first word of the Parsha, the Gimel Shin. Okay? Vayigash elav Yehuda. And Yehuda launches into a masterful soliloquy in a desperate attempt to save his brother. And Yehuda approached close and he said, "Please, my master, let your servant speak a word in the ears of my master. Do not become angry. You are like Pharaoh. Adoni sha'al et avadav, my master, meaning you, Yosef, the viceroy, who I don't know that it's Yosef, asked your servants, us, Hayesh lachem av o ach, do you have a father or brother? And we said, Yesh lanu av zakein, we have an elderly father. V'yeled zukunim katan, and a son of his old age, and his brother died, and he's left alone. To his mother and his father loves him. And you said to your servants, bring him to me, so I could place my eyes upon him." It's so hard. Not so hard, it's impossible, but pretend in some degree that you never heard this before. It's literally impossible. But you have Yosef dressing, think of King Tatkanam. And how he looked when they uncovered his, what was it called, sarcophagus? I don't know. Yosef is dressed like an Egyptian. He has an Egyptian named Tzfanes Paneach. He's wearing garments of royalty. He has Ravid HaZahav, a golden chain, some sort of crown. He's the second in command, technically, but really he's the first in command. And they don't know that it's Yosef. So you said, bring him down. And I placed my eyes upon him. And we said to our master, we cannot bring down. The lad cannot leave his father. If he leaves his father will die. And you said to your servant, if your youngest brother does not come down with you, you will not continue to see my face. No food. So Yehuda says to Yaakov. Yaakov says, Binyamin can't go down. Yehuda says, listen, father. If Binyamin goes down, maybe he'll be killed. Maybe he'll be captured. Maybe not. But if we don't go down, we're all going to die of starvation. We have to get food. And we went up to your servant, father, and we told him the words of our master. And our father said, go down and procure some food. And we said, father, we can't without this youngest son. We cannot see the face of the man, whoever just zoomed in last week, Pnei Ha'ish. And our youngest brother is not with us. Rav Soloveitchik has such a powerful, unbelievable, moving piece on this exchange. I'm quoting from the book Vision and Leadership. The world is so changed. That's not what it says here. I'm saying. I'm thinking of it because of Zoom. It used to be, if you couldn't get to Shir, you just couldn't get to the Shir. By sheer association, I recall an experience of my early youth. I was about 7 or 8 years old. I attended Cheder in Kaslavish, where Soloveitchik speaks so longingly, so powerfully about growing up in Kaslavish. I attended Cheder in Kaslavish. It was a small town on the border of White Russia and Russia proper. My father, his father of Moshe, was rabbi of the town. My teacher, I'm sure some of you have heard about the Rav Cheder Melamed, who he speaks about with such depth and appreciation. My teacher was a Chabadnik, a follower of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was not a great scholar, my teacher. However, I have been grateful to him all my life because he taught me something which no one else, with the perhaps the exception of, who does he say, who taught him? His Cheder Melamed and who? His mother taught me. He did not train my mind, but he somehow addressed himself to my soul and to my heart. Many people practice Judaism, but do so in an unimaginative fashion. They practice Judaism, but they lack sweep. They lack depth. My Cheder Melamed showed me how to behold a vision and how to make it come to life. Parenthetically, Interesting. When he was about 8 years old, 9 years old, his mother took him to his grandfather, Rav Chaim Brisker Zatzal, and she said, test the boy. And Rav Chaim Brisker gave him a faher. Rav Chaim Brisker said to his son, Rav Moshe, the boy's not learning anything in cheder. He doesn't know anything. Take him out. And his father pulled him out and became his Rabbi Muvhak, and he learned for hours a day, every day, Gemara with his father. They realized that in the Chabad cheder, he wasn't learning anything. However, says Rav Soloveitchik, he showed me how to behold a vision and make it come to life. Not many cheder boys knew how to behold a vision. Certainly not how to make it real. He taught me how to dream, how to experience Judaism, not just practice it. And it's such a great challenge. It was a challenge 100 years ago in Kaslavish, White Russia. Imagine today with the distractions of the world and the impurity of this world and the instant gratification philosophy of this world. To not just practice Judaism, to feel it, to behold a great vision, to feel passionate about what we're doing, not to do it by rote. It's such a challenge. So the episode that I am about to relate, says the Rav, took place on a murky, The episode I'm about to relate took place on a murky winter day in January. I still remember the day. It was cloudy and overcast. It was after the Hanukkah festival. The Torah portion of the week was Vayigash. With the end of Hanukkah, the little serenity which this festival brought into the monotonous and listless lives of these poor Jews passed. When Rav Soloveitchik speaks about his upbringing and the Jews of Kaslavish, it takes you to a different time, a different vision. Most of the Jews in the town were poor peddlers. And that small town on the river Soz, a tributary of the Dnieper River. As far as the boys from Cheder were concerned, a long and desolate winter lay ahead. It was a period in which we had to get up when it was still dark and return home with lanterns in our hands, because nightfall was so early. On that particular day, the boys were in a depressed mood, listless, lazy, and sad. We recited, or should I say we chanted mechanically, the first sentences of Parshas Vayigash in a dull monotone. We read mechanically, Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Vayomer bi Adoni, yedaber na avdecha, davar ba'asnei Adoni, va'al yivcha apcha, va'al yivcha apcha, ba'avdecha, ki kamocha kaparo. And we read, Adoni sha'al et avadav leimor, ha'yesh lechem av, o ach, va'nomer el Adoni, yesh lanu av zakein, ve'yalad zukunim katan. We read mechanically, then Judah approached Joseph and said, my Lord, asked his servant saying, have you a father? Have you a brother? And we said to my Lord, we have an old father, an Av Zakein, and a young child of his old age, a Yaled Zakunim. Now keep in mind, the whole exchange between Yehuda and Yosef is very strange for a lot of reasons. Particularly because Yosef asked you, have a father, and Yehuda's talking about the father, but you have to remember, they all know, Yosef already asked the Miketz about the father. So what really is the message here? And something strange happened. The Malamid, the teacher, who was half asleep, while the boy was droning on the words in Yiddish and in Hebrew, he just gives you such a picture of the town. A cheder, lanterns, peddlers, a malamid who's droning on, who's half asleep. They're translating into Hebrew and into Yiddish. The malamid, the teacher who was half asleep while the boy was droning on, the words in Yiddish and Hebrew, suddenly jumped to his feet, with a strange, enigmatic gleam in his eyes. If you've ever read the book by Rabbi Riskin, Letters to My Grandchildren, he talks about when he went back to Russia on one of his trips, and he says that he met the Rav Zchida Melamed. I don't know if it's true or not true, but it's pretty amazing. He jumped to his feet with a strange, enigmatic gleam in his eyes, the Chaida Melamed. He leaped to his feet like a lion. He usually had velvety blue eyes, but suddenly his eyes became piercing, searching, investigating. He motioned to the reader to stop, and he turned to me. Salvechik is a little boy. Pod Rabin, P-O-D-R-A-B-I-N. So the second word, Rabin, like rabbi, Pod Rabin. Assistant to the rabbi. His father was the Rav in the town, Rav Moshe. Pod Rabin, assistant to the rabbi, which is what he called me whenever he was excited. Rav Salvechik was a little boy. What kind of question did Yosef ask his brothers? Hayesh lechem av? Do you have a father? Of course they had a father. Everybody has a father. The only person who did not have a father was the first man of creation, Adam Arishon. But whoever is born into this world has a father. What kind of question was that? So Yehuda purports, and he says, you, master, meaning Viceroy Yosef, asked us, Hayesh lechem av. I tried to answer, Yosef, I finally said, meant to find out whether the father was still alive. In such a case, the Malamed thundered back at me. He should have phrased the question differently. He should have said, is your father still alive? Which is what he said in last week's parsha. The Rav references it here. In 43:27, Mem Gimel Chaf Zayin, Vayish'al lahem l'shalom, Vayomer ha-shalom avicham ha-zakein, Asher amartem ha-odenu chai. So in last week's parsha Miketz, he asked them, how's your elderly father? Peace unto him, is he still alive? So if Salvechik says to the Malamed, oh, he meant, is the father still alive? In that case, he thundered back at me. He shouldn't have said, Hayesh lechem av, do you have a father? But rather, is your father still alive? To argue with the Malamed was useless. As he began to speak, he no longer addressed himself to the boys in the classroom. The impression he gave was that he was speaking to some mysterious visitor, a guest who had come into our cheder room, into that cold room. Yosef did not intend to ask his brothers about avot ditaglin, parentheses, I later discovered this is a Chabad term for parenthood, which is open and visible. He's not asking, thundered the Malamed, his brothers about avos ditaglin, the open, visible parenthood. He was asking about avos de itkasin, the mysterious, the hidden, the invisible parenthood. In modern idiom, I would say he meant to express the fact. What was Yosef asking? About existential parenthood, not biological parenthood. Yosef was not saying biologically, do you have a father? Why not? Biologically, besides for Adam Arishon, everybody has a father. So what does it mean, Hayesh lechem av? What was he asking his brothers? The Malamed continued with great fervor. What was Yosef anxious to know? He was anxious to know whether they, his brothers, felt themselves committed to their roots, committed to their origins. Are you, Yosef asked his brothers, rooted in your father? Do you look upon him the way the branches or blossoms look upon the roots of a tree? Do you look upon your father as the foundation of your existence? Do you see your father as a provider and sustainer of your existence? Hayesh lachem av. Do you recognize the role your father plays in your life? That we are all rooted in a glorious past? Or do we think we live in a vacuum, only in the here and now? Is your father the foundation of your existence? Or Are you a band, said Yosef, of rootless shepherds who forget the makor, the origin, and wander through life from pasture to pasture, from place to place? Suddenly, the Malamid, it's a very powerful, very personal reminiscence of the Rav. Suddenly, he stopped addressing himself to the strange visitor. Imagine, you know, the visitor who wasn't really in the classroom. And he began to talk to us, the boys. Raising his voice, he said to the class, are you modest and humble? Do you admit that the old father represents the old tradition? Could you imagine if you say this 100 years ago, the boys in a cheder in Kaslavish, how much harder it is for us today, and particularly for children today, to appreciate what it means to be rooted in the Masorah. Do you believe, he said to the boys, that the Father is capable of telling you something new, something exciting, something challenging? Does your Father have something to offer you that you did not know before? Or are you boys insolent, arrogant, and vain, denying your dependence upon your Father and your Makor? And the Malami pointed at my study mate, Yitzhak, who is considered the town Ilui, the town prodigy. And in his excitement, he pointed at this boy. Do you have a father? ! Exclaimed the Malami, pointing to the town prodigy, the Ilui. The Malami turned to him and he said, well, what do you say? Who knows more? You the town prodigy, or your father the blacksmith, who can hardly read Hebrew? Are you proud, Yitzhak, of your father? Do you feel humble in his presence? Hayesh lachem av, do you have a father? And then he ended in a whisper. You know, I remember, it was going around online when Rabbi Herschel Schachter Shlita was, I don't know if it was Zoom or live, I don't remember when it was a visitor at the Boca Raton Synagogue. And they asked him in a question and answer, who knows more, you or the past generations? What's the difference between us and the previous generations? And the Rosh Yeshiva of Schachter Shlita answered, and he said, we certainly know more Torah and Halacha, but they certainly had more Yirah Shamayim. Do you feel humble in your father's presence, Yitzhak? Do you have a father? And then he ended the Malamid in a whisper. Remember, Salvechik says, his mother and his Malamid taught him how to feel passionate about Judaism. And then he ended in a whisper and he said, if a Jew admits to the supremacy of his father, lowercase f, then he admits to the supremacy of the universal father, who is very old, the Atik Yomin, Me'olam Ad Olam. Do we recognize our Makor? Do we know where we have come from? This is an experience I had with my Malamid. I have never forgotten it. And then Yosef said to the brothers, Hayesh lachem ach, do you have a brother? We may interpret, and now this is not from the Cheder Malamid. So the way he interprets Hayesh lachem av is based on the lesson he had with his Cheder Malamid in Kaslavish decades prior. But what about the second part of the statement? Okay, this is 44:19. Yes. Okay. Hayesh lachem av. Do you recognize your roots? Like the leaves of a tree, recognize that they're dependent on the roots. And what does it mean? Oh, ach. Hayesh lachem ach. Do you have a brother? What does the old father and the young brother represent in terms of Judaism? When Yosef asked his brothers, do you have a brother? He was not really interested, just like he knew that they had a biological father. He knew from previous conversations that they had a biological brother, or you could say brothers. Yosef wanted to know, listen carefully, does your time awareness and your existential awareness embrace only you and your friends in the here and now? Or does the I exist awareness embrace generations yet unborn as well? Do we live in Judaism only in the here and now? Rav Soloveitchik is going to explain how Yesh Lachem Av represents embracing the past. O Ach, the Ben Zakunim, represents looking towards the future. I think it sort of brings the sheer full circle, because we began by Asar B'Teves, by knowing that we only fast for on Shabbos for a future event. So while we remember the Av, the past calamity, tomorrow, in tomorrow's case, the Churban Beis HaMikdash, we must also always be future-facing and hope for better times in the future. Do you believe that the future, continues Rav Soloveitchik, can be shaped by your present actions? Do you know it is worthwhile to work and sacrifice for the future, represented in this little brother, that little child? Binyamin wasn't so little. He had 10 sons, all named after Yosef at this point. But you know how the baby in the family is always the baby in the family. Or do you know nothing of the future and nothing of the past? Do you know of the old man and the little boy? Both questions asked by Yosef were answered in the affirmative. Because what do they say in 44:20? Vanomer el Adoni yesh lanu av zakein. We are rooted in our past. V'yeled zakunim katan. And we have our eyes set to the future. Yes, we have a very old father in whom we are all deeply rooted. And therefore, we are rooted in the eternal ideals of the Atik Yomin. And yes, we have a wonderful, young, talented, bright child with shining eyes who represents the world of tomorrow. We feel when we glance at the child that he is challenging us to make possible the birth of generations yet unborn. And Rav Soloveitchik says, the answer that the sons of Yaakov gave to Yosef, we have a father and we have a brother, must hold true even today. We must be committed to our old father, to the great and mysterious past, to eternal ideals which sustain our nation. We didn't just emerge in the here and now. We are not rootless people. And when I was preparing shiur, I love when could you close it? Yeah, please. Thank you so much. There's only a couple minutes left, but it's noisy. Thank you very much. I love when I see such hashkacha in preparing my shiur. I knew when I came to Vayigash I wanted to teach this piece. It's such an unbelievable piece of Rav Soloveitchik. But I didn't remember every sentence. And then Rav Soloveitchik says, the fact that we are committed to our old father, to a great mysterious past and to eternal ideals, only this, listen to what he says, ready? Only this can account for our mourning, a temple consumed by fire nearly 2,000 years ago. That's the Hashkacha. I knew I wanted to teach this piece. And then when I realized it was Asar B'Teves, I thought it would be appropriate to start with an insight into Asar B'Teves. And then when I found Rabbi Roslin, he speaks not only about Asar B'Teves, but the connection to Yosef. And how does Rav Soloveitchik end the piece? By saying the fact that we have a father doesn't mean biologically, it means we're rooted in the past. Only this. Hayesh lechem av. Yesh lanu av zakein. Yes, said the brothers. Yes, we must say. Yes, we must transmit to our children. Only this, our awareness of being rooted in the past, can account for mourning the temple, which was consumed by fire 2,000 years ago. Only this, our attachment to the past, our Av Zakein, can account for our deep commitment to the land of Israel. And yet we are committed not only to the great past, but to the glorious future. the young child that the future represents. The child is our ambassador of the future. And so we behold a great vision of tomorrow. When you fast tomorrow, have this year in mind. It's not such a minor fast. So, wow. It's a fast that combines mourning the past, but it also determines the future. No wonder it's read in conjunction with the story of Yosef HaTzadik, who knew that he was always rooted in the past. But at the same time, Yosef challenged his brothers and said, "Do you know what I know? We're rooted in the past, but always looking to the future." And so Asar Bateves, the muzzle of which is a goat, which represents the goat's blood that the Ksonas Pasim was dipped into, can be fasted on Shabbos. Because the Chassam Sofer says, for a fast for the future, you can fast on Shabbos. And so Asar Bateves is not only about the past. It's not only about the siege in the year 3336 of the forces of Nebuzaradan and Nebuchadnezzar. It's about determining that we have a future. Says the Rav, we are both past-minded and future-oriented. One more small paragraph. Judaism demands that we arrange a rendezvous. There was a question on the chat. No, someone likes the shir. Thank you, Baruch Hashem. Judaism demands that we arrange a rendezvous between the old father and the young child. And that's Asar Bateves. It's a rendezvous. Isn't it beautiful? Aren't you happy you came? I hope so. I'm happy you came. Thank you. Judaism demands a rendezvous between the old father and the young child. And that's Asar Bateves. It's mourning for Churban, but knowing through Vayigash Goshen, changing ourselves, we could change the future. And maybe this year there won't be a Tisha B'Av. This is the Masorah. This is the tradition, the oral transmission, the merging of past and future. The Av Zaken, last sentence, must teach the Yalid Zakunim two things. What is the transmission of the Masorah? Divine discipline, how to carry out, perform the mitzvos, and divine romance, how to be excited and in love with Torah and mitzvos. Not just to do divine discipline, but to feel divine romance. And it's the role of the Av Zaken, the past, to transmit this dual Masorah to the Yalid Zakunim, the future. Vayigash Elav Yehuda, Hayesh Lachem Av, O Ach. Shabbi Zocha, that tomorrow when we fast, and perhaps if you weren't planning to fast, you have some more insight into the importance of why tomorrow is such a significant fast day. Ribbono Shel Olam will see our efforts and determine that just maybe this year, Tisha B'Av will be not a day of Avelus, but a Yom Simcha, the Yom Tov. I wish you a wonderful Shabbos, a Besuras Tovos, and an easy fast. Thank you so much, everybody.